The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This is Andrew Horowitz on the Disciplined Investor Podcast, and I have a very special guest today. We have a fellow podcaster with us that's going to share some insight and a little bit of history, some outlook, and I think will be very not only entertaining, but will really help you understand some more things about your investments. Paul Douglas Boyer is the host of the very popular Mad Money Machine podcast. You can find that at madmoneymachine.com, and you can find that on iTunes and all sorts of other places. So I welcome him today, and thanks for joining me today, Paul.
Thank you very much, Andrew, for having me on your show.
Right. You know, I do. I've listened to your podcast. You have an interesting, I think it's refreshing, frankly, way of approaching the area of business. And your podcast really isn't all business. Do you want to tell us a little bit more about it?
Well, I've come to the point where I've discovered that investing is boring. And so I try to do things to make the topic of investing less boring, quite frankly.
Okay.
So it means trying to entertain the audience.
Well, tell me, where did that come? Where did that demarcation point come that you think that, you know, investing is boring?
Well, because if I do it right, I don't have to read the Wall Street Journal or watch CNBC, or I really don't have to know anything. I just buy and hold the index funds that give me exposure to risk around the globe, and I set it and forget it. I invest and relax, and I'm done. And it's a beautiful, wonderful, freeing thing.
Yeah, well, obviously there is I agree with you. There's a huge difference from traditional active management. And whether you take active management to mean the everyday process or even the process where you have to be on it, whether it's sell stops, whether it's watching to see if the markets are going to move in a direction against you, whether you're obviously going to be looking at the economics and the other side of the coin, which is the passive investment, whereas either you hand it off to someone else or you just purely index it. And I know that you're in favor of indexing, of course, as the main means, yeah?
I do. I come from an engineering background, and engineering is really all about efficiency. How can you get the most work out of the least amount of effort, actually?
Right.
And for me, having started looking at Cramer's methodologies and his techniques for picking stocks and going that whole route, I've come to find out that for me, just set it and forget it is the engineering way to.
When was your introduction, and is that how you started? You got pretty excited by watching Cramer on TV and on radio, and maybe through his various subscriptions. Is that where it all started for you investing?
Actually, I've been investing in equities since 1983, but I came into a little bit of extra money in 2005 that I wanted to invest and make it grow the right way. Of course, I, you know, went like a lot of other people through the dot-com crash and lost a good chunk of money from my IRA and other investments in that.
You weren't alone.
And I wanted to pick up the pieces.
Right.
And at the time, I came into a little bit of money. Just about the same day was the day that Jim Cramer's Mad Money TV show started on CNBC, March of 2005, exactly.
Really?
And I watched every single episode of that show.
Well, it's compelling. Let's be honest. It's compelling. I mean, it's interesting. if nothing else, from a standpoint of excitement, it's there, right?
It is extremely exciting. And when you have the notion that you can buy a stock and make a whole lot of money, what's not exciting about that?
Right. So what did you find out? I mean, I really, to be very honest with you, this is not a setup because I've gone back and forth and I've seen him in action. And one of my earlier podcasts, I even discussed with my audience that, you know, not everyone should be looked at as an absolute, whether it's me, you, Cramer, look at Peter Lynch or Buffett. You know, you have to do diversification. Now, whether, again, that's index investing, whatever it is, not my point. But don't just listen to one man because not only is Cramer, I think, what happens is that he mentions the stock and it drives it up immediately because the masses just listen to that name without any further research. I think that people believe that if it's good enough to be on TV, it's good enough to be in their portfolio, right?
Well, that's the problem with it, I think. And he does actually say on his show many times that you should do an hour of homework per stock that you own per week. And so he recommends reading the annual reports, listening into conference calls. And I found that watching his show 5 hours a week, and then back in 2005, he also had a radio show that I would listen to another 5 hours a week, and then trying to read annual reports and listen to conference calls and all that was taking way too much of my time for what I wanted to accomplish.
Sure. Yeah, no, the thing is that we need to say that if you're going to be involved in the market, obviously it takes time if you're going to do that, if you choose to do that. My whole day is spent doing that, obviously, and that's what I get paid to do, whether or not we believe indexing or active. I mean, that's what I do. But again, in your circumstance, I mean, obviously, I would venture to say here, and I'm stepping out on a limb, but tell me where we're going with this, that somewhere along the line, things weren't working out. Is that? And I really don't know the answer to this, but I'm assuming that if it was working out, you'd still be doing it.
I would probably assume the same thing, except I also wanted to absorb as much as I could from other people. Just like you say, I didn't want to trust just one man, and read a lot of books, every investment book I could get my hands on. When I exhausted the active trading books, I came across the passive investing books. And from an engineering standpoint, they made a lot of sense.
Sure. Absolutely. No, because they have empirical evidence. Let's say that they have empirical evidence that can be not only shown to be very, very consistent, but they can be repeatable. That's the big issue.
Yes.
That's the big issue there. So obviously there was that point that things weren't working out so well. And then you started reading the index books and the things about indexing. So now at the same time, though, you were developing this podcast, which was dealing with, at the time, Cramer's Picks. That's where it started, right?
Exactly. And in December of 2005, at the fever pitch of my Cramer fandom, I guess you'd say, I started a podcast, and I wanted to track his performance and talk about his stock recommendations in a little bit more detail and talk about, how they have performed and things.
Right.
And actually, a month prior to that, I was actually on his Mad Money TV show.
Really?
He had one of those live, shows where he invites a studio audience to come in.
So you were kind of a Cramer groupie for a little while there.
I was a Cramer
groupie. Oh, I got you. Oh, I didn't realize it was that much. I got it. You know, listen, Seeking Alpha has, currently has Cramer picks also on. I mean, it's a national obsession, let's say that, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And I wanted to get in on it, and I thought podcasting was an easy way to share my enthusiasm about it.
Right.
And so what I started then in the beginning of 2006 was something I called the Portfolio Smackdown. Mm. What I was going to do is track stocks that Cramer recommended in 10 categories. He had a show in the middle of 2005 where he talked about a recommended portfolio. He talked about how you should pick a retailer, or you should pick a technology, a cyclical, a secular, a speculative, a financial, blue chip, an oil, and a couple others.
All the best in each of the sectors, right?
Pick the best stock in each one of those sectors. And so I said, all right, I'll start out with $100,000 in play money and pick one of his recommended stocks in each one of those sectors.
Sure.
And I will show people how much more money you could make investing with Cramer than just putting it into boring old portfolio of exchange traded funds.
Sure.
Right. And well, the first week in January of 2006, it looked like Cramer was an absolute genius because his picks went up 10% within the first couple of weeks.
Wow.
And the ETFs were only up, some 2% or whatever. January was a fantastic month that year. But throughout the course of it, May of last year, we had a pretty rough time of it until about July. And Cramer's stocks, being more volatile, went down farther than the indexes and never really recovered.
Yeah.
And it turns out at the end of that year, then the exchange traded fund portfolio handily beat those stocks that I had selected from Cramer's featured picks.
Now, let me ask you. So now, as you are much more familiar with how he operates than I am, so he comes on the show and he says, you know, we have ABC stock that I'm pushing. It's the best stock. It's the it's my big play. And obviously he starts biting the head off a dog and ripping his tie off and throwing things at the camera, something of that nature, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And he says, you have to back up the truck, and all sorts of music and sounds and burps and things come out of the TV, right?
That's right.
And then everybody starts buying it. You watch the after hours ticker. It starts moving and all sorts of great things happen. When does he tell you to sell that stock? Is that ever out there?
Never.
So
never says to sell.
You never sell a stock.
He doesn't follow up on his stocks unless someone calls into the lightning round and happens to, again, mention the stock that he had previously featured.
So in theory, you know, let's just take January 1st as a time frame. In theory, he says on January 1st, you know, I want you to buy ABC stock. It's the greatest thing in the world. And you know, back up the truck. You buy that, and you buy that ABC stock, and from there, a few months go by. And whether the stock is doing good or bad is really not the point here. But my point is that, is it possible that he's already put a sell order on that behind the scenes somewhere and just never brought it to the show?
It certainly is possible. In fact, he's got his own Action Alerts Plus newsletter that he sells for $400 a year. And in that, he will often give sell signals that aren't available to the general public.
Right. That's interesting.
But, and I did not subscribe to the Action Alerts Plus newsletter, but I did watch his show every single night. And also there's a website that archives his picks with a transcript. And so I would do a keyword search against all the stocks I held to see if he talked about selling any of them. And he also had a couple other rules about when you should sell. You should not be a hog, he says. If the stock runs up too much, then take your profits. He also talks about cutting your losses early. So if it goes down big, then get out of it quickly.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't say a whole lot about if it just kind of hovers around where it was when you bought it, but I guess that's up for you to decide.
You know, the interesting thing is that the idea of picking a stock, the idea of buying into a position to make a lot of money, because that's really what's happening with Cramer. Let's be honest. We're not looking at Cramer, and I don't think you were at the time. Tell me if I'm wrong again, but, you know, to see if you could just have a reasonable rate of return. You were looking to hit it big. Isn't that probably what you were looking for?
I wanted to beat the market.
Right.
And I thought I would beat it pretty well. You know, I thought getting 20, 25% annualized return over the entire portfolio would be a good target. And I thought that would beat the market. Well, it turns out the ETF portfolio went up 20.6%. And the Cramer portfolio went down 0.2%. Actually lost money on the year.
Well, you know, I got to tell you, you know, from experience, I've been doing this business for about 20 years in the money management business, and I've studied a lot of different theory. As a matter of fact, I have a book coming out, and that's what a lot of this podcast is about, because, you know, I decided to share a lot of the knowledge that I've learned over the last 20 years or so managing money. And one of the things that I've learned is that there is never a particular bang on the desk way of doing things when it comes to investing. You know, there are those firms out there that are just absolutely, you know, DFA investors. I mean, you are only going to be doing passive investing, okay? There are those firms out there that are absolute growth-oriented investors, value, small cap, et cetera, international, unhedged. I think that a healthy dose of many of these things, depending on the time in the economic cycle, is very appropriate. So, for example, that if right now we're having a wide range of returns, and really the large cap is dominating the markets, you know, obviously I think that the ETFs or the index funds, you know, they're going to do very well because that's the predominant part of those. But there may be times that we see a turn that it is a stock picker's market. It is possible, and I've seen it. I've seen it for myself. And I think the ability to zig and zag and not take an absolute stance in any one direction, unless you really don't want to participate in any of it. Now, if you don't want to participate in any of it, you need an autopilot, right?
That's right.
I mean, you need autopilot. So if you need autopilot, that's a different story. But if you want to participate, I think that the ability to understand what happens, take a little bit from Cramer. And by the way, I think there is a way to play Cramer. I think the way to play Cramer is to watch Cramer. I think you and this takes a little work, but you get involved in a real time after hours buying situation where you have one of the major machines, which gives you a level two access to the markets. Okay, you can get that. You watch what he says. The second he says it, you pick up 1,000 or 2,000 shares and you dump it within 3 minutes. That's what you do, and you can make a couple of bucks.
Extremely quick on the trigger because it is instantaneous when it grows up. I call it the Kramer crackle.
Yeah, that's what it is. And the fact is, you don't hold it overnight because you're gonna get crushed.
I have actually seen it where I look at the ticker on the bottom of the screen, and the stock that he's about to mention comes scrolling by at an increased price, and it's before he has even said it the first time.
Well, let me share this with you. Is it possible? Listen to this. Now, listen to this theory for a second. Two things are obviously possible. The first thing we think about is the negative, right? I mean, you know, somebody's leaking some information. Listen, look at a stock today. I mean, don't buy the stock out there, but this stock called Geron, G-E-R-N, Gern. It's a stem cell stock. Now, this stock has been moving for the last 2 days, okay? Today, they come out with an announcement that they're using a new therapy with embryonic stem cells to combat diabetes, and they got some new allowance on doing this, and there was some new benefits from this. Well, why is the stock all of a sudden moving the last 2 days? Mm-hmm. You know, it's not totally kosher, right?
Right, right.
But on the other hand, I'm going to give you something that is really way out on this one. I don't know how this would work exactly, but could there be a delay or somehow an odd,
I wonder,
you know, feed thing going on there with the Kramer? I don't know. I'm just saying, you know, is there something like that on, you know, you got a live ticker coming on the bottom, but maybe his show is somehow, I don't know, you know, something like that.
I was wondering the same thing. Yeah. Could his feed be delayed and somebody's actually able to see it seconds before everybody else? You know, it's the kind of game that's really, I'll tell you a strategy I was thinking that might work well is to short the stocks that he recommends on the opening the next day.
Right.
Because they usually have this Kramer crackle effect. They go up by some 3-5%, and then they'll drift back down to where they were before he talked about it.
Hey, don't go jumping around the directory. We've got more coming up. We'll be right back. The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. If you like what you hear, we want to know. Go to our show's listing on either iTunes or your favorite podcast directory and leave us feedback and a rating. The more feedback we have, the higher our position on the charts. Think of it as the price of admission. It only takes a minute and helps us understand more about what interests you. Keep our blog and podcast popular, and we'll keep providing you with great investment ideas.
All right, so let's get into a discussion of some advice you may have. You know, we talked about index funds or indexing. Do you like ETFs? You like index funds? How does that work?
Yeah, it depends on the person's aptitude as to how they want to open an account. If they actually want to open an account at a brokerage firm, then of course an ETF is a great investment for the long term. Don't trade them around. For my neighbors, mostly opening an account at Vanguard or something like that and just plopping some money into it is a great way to go.
Mm-hmm.
But advice I would have for somebody that's young, that's really starting out investing, is to keep it simple.
Sure.
My goodness, I have all of these old stocks and actively managed funds that I've owned for years that I really shouldn't be owning because they don't really match my risk exposure, my risk capacity properly. And I can't sell them, though, because I would have to incur a capital gains tax on that fund now.
Right.
And so I'm left holding this thing that I really don't want to own. And I wish I would have just bought a total stock market index from the beginning and branched out from there.
Let me ask you, so, you know, not to, you know, trying to change your mind at this point, but if you have a stock that is not matching your needs, and obviously the tax issue, I'm not sure what level of tax issue we're talking about. Obviously, if you have to pay taxes, it's a good thing whether or not it matches exactly. but, you know, does it make sense if the stock is going to potentially slide 10% to take the capital gain because you've had it and it's at 15% these days and just move on so you're not so, you know, concerned about that position?
Well, that's the kind of thing that I can't predict is what a stock's going to do.
Right.
And so, you know, I have tried in the past to say, all right, this stock's probably going to drop 10%. Let me sell it now. And then it ends up going up.
Right.
Or vice versa. You know, and it's just completely frustrating.
I understand totally. I totally understand. I have two particular clients. Let me tell you a story that when they want to sell, you back the truck up and buy. Okay. You just, and when they want to buy, you're like, you know what? I'm getting out of the way of this market. It's going to get ugly. It's invariable. You know, that it happens every single solitary time.
Yeah.
I have advice for people, and this is what I tell them. that if you had, let's say you have this stock with $10,000 in it right now, and you don't know whether to keep it or not because of the tax issues, et cetera, or what it's going to do, I say to him very simply, let's stop and step back for a moment. If you had a brand new $10,000, because this gives you a different perspective, if you have a brand new $10,000, would you put it in that stock? And if the answer is no, sell that stock. You shouldn't have that stock or that fund or whatever the investment is. Because, you know, what happens is I think the human model of forecasting takes in consideration a lot of things that we really shouldn't. For example, if I have a stock that I bought at 10 and now it's 20, I think it's going to go up, or I may have a real fear of it going down and losing my profit, which neither of those things are pertinent or even have to be entered into the discussion because the stock doesn't care how you feel. Okay?
That's right.
On the other hand, if a stock is moving down greatly, oftentimes we say, I'm going to sell it so I don't take any further losses, where there may be another guy saying, you know what? This is ridiculous. This sale is just coming from, I don't know, a dump from a hedge fund or whatever it may be. Again, it could be a mutual fund. It could be whatever it is. It could be the market. It could be an index fund. Maybe if you were wise, you should be buying in more. Again, I'm just giving you different angles here.
Yeah.
But the fact is that we overlay our own emotions in this, and our emotions seem so real and so absolutely honest to ourselves that we make very, very poor decisions. And I think that's one of the big problems. And that's why, by the way, I think you're very right when you talk about index investing. I think that really makes a lot of sense and takes much of the pain out of the idea of you know, what should I be doing? Because index investing, generally speaking, you know, is not going to give you a terribly, terribly bad time, even in the down times, unless the markets really just, you know, absolutely blow up. You can't help that, right? What's your feeling on ETFs?
You know, I like ETFs for someone who wants to open a brokerage account, and you can really get some nice exposure to various asset classes using some of the ETFs out there. For example, if you want to get exposure to international small cap, there's a really good ETF now from WisdomTree, ticker symbol DLS. It's their international small cap exchange traded fund. And it's the kind of thing that's hard to find in other places.
Right.
Especially those that aren't actively managed. And it's got a very low expense ratio, and it's the kind of thing you just add it to your portfolio of diversified global picks and keep it till you retire.
So what's the difference for the audience? I think this is a really good point to ask this question. What is the difference between index investing, where, you know, okay, right there, and passive investing? Is there a difference in your mind?
I think there is, technically speaking. You can have a passively managed fund that doesn't necessarily track a particular index. And it's just a real technical definition. For example, some of the DFA funds, dimensional fund advisors, they have their own sort of internal index that they come up with. So they're not matching the S&P 500 or the Wilshire 5000 or one of those widely known indices. But theirs is still a passively managed fund. There's no active person in there trying to decide if a stock is going to go up or down. It's just based on a mathematical formula.
Sure.
And they do say that they paper their walls with some of the bankrupt stocks that they've bought.
Right.
But, and Cramer talks about the same thing when he talks about index funds that, you know, along with all the good ones, you're buying the bad ones.
Sure. But how does that differ from when you're now picking an ETF that may in fact be, I don't know, let's say the international small cap, you know, how do you then choose the asset allocation? Isn't that the real challenge?
Absolutely. That's the very first thing that an investor should decide before they start investing is to figure out what should be their exposure to risk.
Right.
At the most coarse level, it would be how much stocks versus bonds. But then within your stocks, it would be how much do I weight large cap versus small cap versus value versus international versus emerging market versus REIT? And that sort of breakout.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, some of the lazy portfolios that people talk about, they may just blindly put 10% in each type of category, or they may tweak it a little bit here and there, slice and dice type portfolio.
So let's do something that is a little bit different than, you know, usually I'm giving out information and I'm, you know, relatively generic and in general. Let's talk about Joe Average and his wife, Mary. And, you know, let's give them, you know, idea. How do they go about that? Okay, that's great. I say, you know, what we just said is great. You know, you have to have asset allocation. You need to make sure that your risk factors are made to equal your risk tolerance. You need to diversify. Now, let's talk about that in layman's terms.
Okay.
How does the average guy go out and figure out let's get beyond what is large cap for a moment. But, you know, how do I know how much large cap I should have?
Well, you know, if you listen to John Bogle, he would basically just say buy the U.S. total stock market fund, and maybe 80% of your stocks would be in that. And if you like some international, put 20% in that. And that is probably the coarsest, lazy portfolio that anyone's recommending at this point.
And lazy doesn't mean bad, right? I mean,
lazy means great.
Right.
Lazy means great. Right. It means I don't have to worry about it. I put my money in it and I come back in 30 years.
Right. Well, I liked your reference to the Ron Popeil said it and forget it.
But, that's right.
Yeah. So they do that. So now next steps. It's like, that's great, but that's not for me. I want to, you know, a little more diversity.
Here's where Cramer comes in. He makes investing exciting for people, and people get interested in their money, and they may want to take 5% of their net worth even. And play it with, you know, a more aggressive strategy. They may want to buy individual stocks and follow his recommendations. And he recommends with the other, first of all, Cramer always says, we're not investing money that you need, which I've always wondered, well, how much money do I have that I don't need?
Well, obviously, whatever you're going to invest, because the probability, from what I understand, is it may not be there.
Right. And he says, don't play with your retirement money. Yeah, well, for a lot of people, most of their investments, I think, is going to be in 401k plans.
Absolutely.
And IRAs and that kind of thing. So you're not playing with that.
Sure.
So you've got this tiny amount of money that you're buying stocks with and trading around with and watching his show and that. But it keeps you interested. And if you're interested, then you're also going to be interested in the money that's in your retirement account.
Right.
Too.
It's going to stimulate the idea of looking at it. Yeah, sure.
And at that point, you're going to say, well, what can I do beyond just owning the U.S. total stock market fund? How can I, you know, get an incremental bit better return by adding some exposure to small cap companies, adding some exposure to value companies, going out for the emerging markets, international, adding a little bit of REITs in there. And I think that's really when the light turns on for a lot of people and they really get in good shape at that
Sure.
point.
So now we have this portfolio and, you know, the next thing is obviously to invest, and we have to pick a place, whether it's going to be ETFs, whether it's going to be, you know, mutual funds or however the style. And again, depending on where we, you know, what we utilize to figure that out. So I think that the next step is people need to realize that when they get to that next stage of that play money, you know, what I have found is that there are so many people out there hawking their wares. You know, they're going out there and almost like the guy in the Westerns, you know, that come up and say, hey, this is amazing and it cures so many people and it will make you sick for the first 2 days because it's turpentine, you know, and then you're going to feel much better. And then by the time that you've done it, you know, they're gone. But I've seen some people get ruined by utilizing some of these, let's call them coloring systems that will flash a particular color. Let's just call it blue. If it is a good time to buy a stock by utilizing some very unsophisticated yet sophisticated looking modeling to create a buying opportunity. And I have seen before my eyes someone practice for a year making $20,000, $30,000 a month in paper trades and then went live and lost $60,000 immediately.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's a shame that they end up – that they start out making that kind of money in the paper trades because, you know, it's just it's like betting on a number on a roulette wheel. Hey, I won this time. Right. Let me put some more money on the same number.
Right. All right. Well, we're going to close here because we don't want to get too long in the tooth and, you know, take out everybody's final few gigabytes of their iPods and their computer. Any last words of advice you have to people or anything you want to tell them?
Well, I just appreciate you having me on your show, and I've got a show out at madmoneymachine.com. If they want to see, we're continuing this portfolio smackdown into 2007, but instead of me picking the stocks, what I've done is I've signed up 23 people that are playing with play money. I give them each $100,000, mm-hmm. and they're trying to invest it according to Cramer's recommendations and see if the average of the Cramer followers can beat the index. And as of this point, the answer is no, they're not.
Well, the index also, let's also be fair that the index right now is a little bit out of joint with reality. I mean, it really is, in my opinion. I'm not suggesting that that it's not always going to be, but I think there is a absolute a disparity between what the index is and what the rest of the market is. Not totally saying it's because of, obviously, that's why we want to index. I just think there's kind of a point here that things are running up a little too fast in the wrong places. But we'll see if that straightens out. I don't know. We'll see. But anyway, yeah, visit the Mad Money Machine. You can find you on, what, iTunes, and where else are you located? Right on your website?
Yep, right on the website. I can click a link there and listen to it, or get links to the iTunes or other feed location.
Terrific. Hey, thanks a lot, and we'll speak to you really soon, and we'll go from there. Good luck.
Thank you, Andrew, and good luck to you.
Thanks. Well, that about wraps it up for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Thanks for listening, and I hope to see you around real soon.
Information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contain forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations, and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor regulated by the SEC. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.
Hey, thanks for listening to today's podcast. We'll be here next time. Keep the emails coming in and be sure to subscribe.